Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, Mama, I'm in fear for my life from the long arm of the law.
Got miles to go before we sleep.
Lawman is putting an end to my running, and I'm so far from my
home. We will not go gently. We're going to unleash hell here in December.
Oh, Mama, I can hear you a-crying. You're so scared and all alone.
Hey, somebody fix this guy's buckle. Hey, so he can play football.
He's coming down from the gallows, and I don't have very long.
Ladies and gentlemen of Steeler Nation, we welcome you back to another edition of The Standard is the Standard. Now, as Mike Tomlin says, the standard is the standard, and we abide by that same philosophy here on this show. And my normal co-host, Lance Williams, was unable to join us. The standard remains the same, folks, as I bring in our normal producer, Chris Carter, to fill in. Those are some big shoes, Chris. Are you ready?
Oh, I'm super ready, man. Thanks for having me on the show. Let's get it going.
Hey, that sounds good. Now, before we get into specific Steelers talk, I wanted to talk to you. I know you're a Pittsburgh guy. You're from Pittsburgh, live in Pittsburgh,
yeah.
I believe. I know that I wanted to talk to you about something that was written on the site today. It kind of ruffled some feathers a little bit, and it shouldn't, but it did, especially on Facebook. And that was an article written by Tony Defoe, who writes for his regular writer, contributors for BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. And he wrote about the Pittsburgh Pirates, which I am a big Pittsburgh fan myself. I love the Penguins, I love the Pirates, and I love the Steelers. And they all have a special place in my heart. I'm not going to rank them in any way, shape, or form. But the Pirates have been playing great baseball. They had the second-best record in Major Leagues, and they just took 3 of 4 from St. Louis in a homestand up until the break. And it wasn't just that they took 3 of 4. It's the way that they did it. The 14-inning game, Andrew McCutchen's 2-run home run to win it in the 14th inning. And then in the 10th inning, when scoring 3 runs to come back and win, just insanity. Now, here's the debate, though, because I know you're as excited as I am about the Pirates.
Oh, yeah.
He brought up whether or not Pittsburgh was slowly fading out of being a Steelers town and fading into being a Pirates town. I wanted to get your gist onto whether or not you felt that was accurate, whether you still believe that, or whether it's just a changing of the times. You know, it's an ebb and flow, you know what I mean? What do you think?
Now Tony's, I love him. He's always put this, he's put this out before. I think this is like the third straight year where he's posted an article about how the Pirates are taking over Pittsburgh. And as much as I love the Buckles, and I was there Saturday night, I stayed until 1 o'clock in the morning when Kutch hit that home run ball over the center field wall. Lost my mind, was pointing at Cardinals fans who were talking back all game. I'm all about the Pirates. I love what they're doing. They're bringing it back. And then last night they did it again. But no, they cannot replace the Steelers. You're out of your mind. Pittsburgh is a football town. They are right now, the Pittsburgh, any city will love a winner. Any city will support a winner. And right now, the Pirates look like winners. You know, if not too long ago when they were really bad, there were questions as if they were going to leave Pittsburgh, what are we going to do? You know, how long can they keep losing? Will they ever turn it around? And people went because it was a sociable event. But, you know, the Pirates, it was like the Pirates. When the Steelers are bad, people are breaking things. People want to fire Mike Tomlin. People are crying because Ben Roethlisberger is wasting his years away. You know, but the Pirates, they're doing great right now, and there's going to be a lot of hype around them. And because there's no football, that's going to take – I do think the Pirates come before the Penguins. If their seasons don't really – overlap at all, but if the Pirates were in the World Series while the Penguins were in the Stanley Cup, I think the Pirates would be would have more of a grasp on the city because Pittsburgh is their second thing in baseball. Our second thing here, when the Pirates do great, people do want to see them. But you know, if they're not fighting for the division, you know, if it only is like, you know, we like them, but, you know, they're not the Steelers. If the Steelers are potentially a wild card team, town's going crazy over them, and the town loves it. We're a football town first and foremost, and I think that's going to be right now. Yes, I think Pirates news. If we're talking about if you're talking about what should come on when Bob Pompeiani gets on at night and does his Sunday night countdown with all the other sports reporters in Pittsburgh, you know, the lead should be about the Pirates right now because they're performing great. They are proving to be one of the best teams in baseball. They're looking like they might be the best team in baseball the way they played this weekend. But no, but just know this. When St. Vincent opens up and we're going to camp there, that will take precedent over what the Pirates are doing. On opening day, if the Pirates are 5 games ahead in first place, more people will be caring about what the Steelers do to the Patriots on opening night than they will be if the Pirates are playing to clinch the division, their first division title since the early 90s. So that's where I stand. And I love the enthusiasm of the Pirates, but hold your horses. They're not replacing the Steelers. There is no change in the times. Where do you stand? Do you think that's a realistic thing that could happen in the future?
Yeah, I mean, personally, if you take yourself and your fandom out of the equation and just kind of remove yourself, levitate over everything and just watch, it fluctuates. It's like a wave. Like right now, the Pittsburgh Pirates are in season. The Pittsburgh Penguins are not even close to their preseason even, and the Steelers are starting to gain some momentum. As someone that runs a website, you start seeing your traffic ticking up a little bit each and every week as you get closer to training camp, and that's because people are starting to get the itch for football, and football trumps everything. Now,
everything.
In terms of Pittsburgh, that's a very unique town. I grew up close enough that I have a very good feel for what happens there. That Pittsburgh is a town that they just love their teams, but the teams outside of Pittsburgh, that's different. Because the Steelers outside of Pittsburgh is Steeler Nation. And that's I'll give you a general a way to kind of tangibly grasp this. On Facebook, when I post our Behind the Steel Curtain articles on Facebook, there's over 6 million followers on the Pittsburgh Steelers official Facebook page. You go to the Pittsburgh Pirates, it's just over 1.5 million. The Penguins, just under 2 million followers. It's drastically different. So when it comes to people who are upset about the article written today, that would have been a perfect article for a local Pittsburgh paper that's talking about just the Pittsburgh faithful that are there for all three teams. You take it to the grand spectrum of Pittsburgh sports, and it becomes a whole new can of worms because now Steelers fans that are living in Texas and they're living over in California, they might follow the San Francisco Giants like Lance Williams does. They might say, well, look, I could care less about the Pittsburgh Pirates. I care about the Steelers. That's why I check your site. I understand where the vitriol came from. But, no, I think the Steelers ultimately are a unique beast, and it's what makes football so great. Why? There's only 16 guaranteed games.
Yep.
You look at baseball, 162. You look at hockey, 82. Football, Sundays, Thursdays, or Mondays, it is an event. And it's not like
everyone's
an event, like, okay, like you said, exactly. Everyone's there, everyone's tuned in, and everyone is waiting to see what the black and gold is going to do on this week. And if you lose, it could make or break your season. If the Pittsburgh Pirates go out and get swept when they come out of the All-Star break, it's not going to end their season. It's like a bump in the road, you know? Same with the NHL. They have a tough stretch where they lose 3 or 4 in a row, not the end of the world. You lose 3 or 4 in a row in the NFL, you might as well kiss your season goodbye, as the Steelers saw in 2013 when they started out 0-4. It was an uphill battle the whole way. It's just a different beast. And it's like comparing apples and oranges, and you're trying to compare. It's just like when Brian DiArdo, your co-host were on the show What's Hot, that airs on Wednesday nights, he wrote the article, Who is the best or most prominent Pittsburgh sports athlete right now? Well, that's tough, because how do you compare Ben Roethlisberger at 6'4", 240 pounds, who makes defensive linemen and linebackers look ridiculous in these Houdini plays, and compare him to someone like Andrew McCutchen or Garrett Cole, who pitches 175 games? You can't do it, in my opinion. It's very difficult, very difficult. So before I would go any further, I do want to let people know that they can call in at any time. You can chime in, make this a discussion, 347-850-8581. I'll say it one more time, 347 850-8581. We do have a caller. Let me get this gentleman on the air. We have a 707 number. You're on with Jeff and Chris. Go ahead with your question.
It's Oz.
Hello.
It's Land.
Oh, it's Land.
It's Land.
Oh, it's Land.
What's up, dude?
Have you been listening
later
to the discussion? What's
I
that?
Just called in. I was get out of Kaiser, and first thing I did was give you guys a call. So, no, I have not been able to listen to the discussion.
Well, let me fill you in, Lance, because I want to get your opinion on this as well before we move on to the next topic. And whether you stay on with us, that's up to you. We're talking about an article written on the site today that was basically stating that the Pittsburgh Pirates might be gaining ground on the Pittsburgh Steelers in terms of Pittsburgh being a baseball city, a pirate city, and is surpassing the Steelers. What is your opinion on that?
Oh, that's crazy. That's just crazy talk there.
That's what I said.
If anything, Pittsburgh could be a hockey town. The Pens are huge. The Pens are absolutely huge. But the Pirates, nah, they lost too much. You know, for Pittsburgh to be a baseball town. And growing up in Pittsburgh, Pittsburgh's always will be, well, since I've been alive, and that's since 1970, it's always been a Steeler town. I mean, it's just, at that point, it was Steelers and Buccos, and then Pens. And then when Mario Lemieux came to the Penguins and the Penguins started winning, then it became Steelers, Pens, Buccos, as the Buccos went into that 20-year swoon. But it's great to see the Buccos win it. I love those uniforms last night. I actually had that jersey and that hat growing up as a kid. So kudos to the Pirates. Raise the Jolly Rancher.
Jolly Rancher? What are you talking about?
Come on, man. It's a Jolly Roger. Get it right.
Oh, it's a Jolly Rancher.
I know.
See?
See, he's a San Fran Giants fan now that he's out on the West Coast. That's the
yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into the Steelers talk. And, Lance, like I said, if you want to cut out at any time, by all means, I know you're traveling right now with us. We wanted to talk about the NFL Top 100 rankings. Now, we have not been as the standard on for a couple weeks. And then during that time, the big three, the killer bees, as people call them, Ben Roethlisberger, Le'Veon Bell, and Antonio Brown, all found themselves in the top 30. Now, Ben Roethlisberger was ranked, I believe, 26th. Correct me if I'm wrong, Chris.
26, yep.
And Le'Veon Bell was ranked, what was it, 16th or?
16.
And then, obviously, Antonio Brown finished 8th.
Mm-hmm.
None of them were the top position players at their respective position. And that was definitely a cause for a lot of people to be angry. But, Lance, I'm going to send it to you first. Lance, do you think that those three guys were ranked in order of importance to the team, meaning that Antonio Brown is the most important, Le'Veon Bell is the second, and Ben Roethlisberger is the last in terms of those three? And do you think that their ranking was appropriate, or do you think it was wrong? Go ahead.
In terms of level of importance, you've got to put the quarterback first. I think you've got to go quarterback, running back, wide receiver. In terms of positional grade, each of those guys not being number one at their position, I think is very accurate for Ben Roethlisberger. I'd put him top five. I'd probably put him at number five. In terms
he missed
the
top
wide
five.
He missed, yeah, he did miss the top five. I'd put him in my personal top five. So I think it's appropriate for Ben. In terms of Antonio Brown, I put him number two currently in terms of the wide receiver position, and that's to Dez Bryant. I got Megatron at three. I think the one you can question, though, in my opinion, is Le'Veon Bell. I think Le'Veon Bell right now is the most complete and the best running back in the National Football League. And that's no disrespect to Beast Mode, who's a fellow Cal alum. But I think Le'Veon Bell is the best running back in the National Football League.
What do you think, CC?
So my standing was this: we were covering the top 100 pretty closely on What's Hot because we would air on the same night as they would put them on. When Ben came in at 26, I felt like Well, I mean, at least he finally cracked the top 30. Because they had him at 61. Like, they had him behind random guys that it was insulting for. They put him in the top, but he's still number six at quarterback. And I'm a big Russell Wilson fan. I think that he is a premier player in this league, but I can't put him above Ben just yet. You know, I can't. As much numbers as Andrew Luck put, I can't put Luck up in front of Ben yet. The two guys that I think you can say are definitely better than Ben Roethlisberger and deserve to be ahead of him on the top 100 are Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers. Give it to them. Okay, I won't fight you. But even Peyton Manning right now, he's not. You know, you can say his stats, you can say his 500 touchdowns, but at the same time, he's not a playoff producer, and he's proven it time and time again. He's just not. And Ben, though, Lance will bring up the fact that he hasn't won since we beat the Ravens in the AFC Championship game, since we beat the Jets in the AFC Championship game. He's proven it several times when he's in the playoffs. He can put it on. And Peyton, that has been his flaw his entire career, and he's on the tail end of it. I think that Ben should have been ranked higher, as high as three. You know, you can argue with Manning and maybe Wilson, because Wilson's gone to back to back Super Bowls, but he's got to be up there. So that was my biggest thing. If I were to rank them in order, I would say Antonio Brown would be the highest Steeler, then Ben Roethlisberger, then Le'Veon Bell. But also, I think with the rankings, I would have put Le'Veon Bell so much higher. He was the fifth ranked running back. They had him behind Jamaal Charles, and Jamaal Charles is a speed demon. He's a bad man, but what Le'Veon Bell brought to the table last season was so much more than what Jamaal Charles brought to the table. And here's my issue with the top 100. So many times they will use the "what have you done for me lately" excuse to put down a player on their list, but then they won't pay attention to that player, to certain players like Le'Veon Bell, who had a better year than most of the running backs that we will put in. It was DeMarco Murray was the number one running back. Lynch was the number two running back. Who did they put at number three? Oh shoot, I can't remember right now. It escapes me right now. But I know Jamaal Charles was put ahead of him as well. And I think there was one more guy that was listed ahead of him. But when you looked at it, he was undisputedly he was one or one A with DeMarco Murray in production last year, and he's put at 16 and you know not in the top running backs. And for Antonio Brown, I mean, again, if we're looking at what have you done for me lately, he's outdone Calvin Johnson 2 years in a row. Yet Calvin Johnson still is listed ahead of him on the top 100. They say that these lists are predicated on the players and what they say. But I mean, I saw on Devin McCourty, he said last week, you know, when they asked him, he said he just filled stuff in because he's like, this is ridiculous. Some of the players don't even really care. They're going to say whatever they're going to say anyway. So there might be some dissension as far as how players actually, you know, how much of a contribution the players have to this list. But I think if you're looking at wide receivers, Antonio Brown needed to be undisputed number one. Because not just this year, it's not like he burst onto the scene. Last year when he exploded, we knew who he was. The league didn't, but we did. This year when he did it again, it's like, okay, hands down, right now, he's the best. You can say that Calvin Johnson has better frame, he has better potential to be a better receiver, but right now he hasn't done it. And whether it's injuries or whatever, It's a fact that Antonio Brown has outperformed him for the past two seasons in the NFL. So I thought Antonio Brown, I thought he was going to eight when he got eight. I thought that was where they're going to put him. I thought he should, if in mine, he's right around five or six. He, you know, for me in the NFL, and I think he's the most important Steeler. You know, I understand the game goes through Roethlisberger and he gives a lot of great opportunities for Antonio Brown, but the things that he does to get open. And to be as accurate as he is for Ben, and to be as reliable as he is for Ben, I think it's unparalleled with anything that anyone else is doing at the wide receiver position in the NFL right now. And so that is why I would put him higher on the list. And I do think Ben should be higher. I do think Bell should be higher. But even though he was the highest rated at his position of any Steeler on the list, Antonio Brown would deserve to be number one. And that was probably my biggest gripe beyond Bell and Roethlisberger.
Well, I think this is what you get when you have a list that's developed by players. And like you said, there's a lot of players when they vote, they probably don't care. Now, if they do care, a lot of times they are not counting, you know, some might look at their overall piece of work for 2014, and some people might look at an entire career. And that's why you see Peyton Manning still really high, because regardless of what you think recently, he's one of the greatest quarterbacks that ever played. It's also why you look at a guy like Jamal Charles, and they're kind of putting him, okay, Le'Veon Bell's only done it really 1 year. He's a second-year player at the time, going into his third year. Antonio Brown, he's done it 2 years in a row, but Calvin Johnson is just a freak who can take over a game, although Antonio Brown has proven that as well. These rankings, people have to remember, I mean, trust me, I was as upset as anyone when I saw Roethlisberger was the sixth-ranked quarterback. But at the same time, these rankings are exactly what they are. They're on the surface. It's very superficial, and it doesn't really matter. Maybe it's a sense of motivation. Maybe, you know, whatever you want to say. This kind of got me thinking, though, and it was the running backs, because I think if anyone was misplaced, you know, Roethlisberger, let's be honest, I think some of these guys hold some personal feelings towards the Steelers. I've always said that I felt that the Pittsburgh Steelers were like the New York Yankees of the NFL. They've won the most.
Oh, yeah.
People kind of get sick of them. They either love them or you hate them, pretty much. I mean, that's essentially the way most people view the Steelers. And when you're the quarterback of the Steelers and you've won as much as Ben Roethlisberger has, a lot of times people hold some malice. And so I think that might have something to do with those rankings. Nonetheless, I looked at the running back and I said, DeMarco Murray, okay? And I looked at the statistics. Now, this stemmed an article, and I don't know if you read the article on Behind the Steel Curtain, and it was essentially stating, I looked at their two, Le'Veon Bell versus DeMarco Murray, because I think if you looked at who were the best running backs in 2014, it's going to come down to those two guys, especially from a fantasy football perspective and an everyday production perspective. Now, DeMarco Murray rushed for more yards. However, he also carried the ball over 100, almost 100 times more than Le'Veon Bell. And Le'Veon Bell had almost twice the receiving yards. And it was just amazing to me. Now, my question for you is, we're going to take this in two parts. And I'm going to ask you this first, and then I'm going to go to Lance.
All right.
From a regular, everyday, Sunday perspective, do you like Le'Veon Bell more than DeMarco Murray? Also from fantasy, and do you see either one of these players taking a step back in 2015? Look at DeMarco Murray. He doesn't have that offensive line to run behind anymore. He's got in Philadelphia with a couple other established running backs, and Darren Sproles, Ryan Matthews. And then you got Le'Veon Bell, who's going to be suspended for an early portion of the season. We don't know how long yet. And you wonder if he can put up that kind of production again. And that was ridiculous production last year. What do you think?
So my standings on who's the better running back, when you look at completeness, complete and what they bring to the table, DeMarco Murray, I don't want to discredit Murray for what he was able to do in 2014. He was amazing. He did a lot of great stuff. But you know, when people say that offensive line did a lot of work for him, they're not lying. I mean, sometimes when he would get through the hole, he wouldn't be touched for a good 5 yards. And he still was a bad man when he had the ball in his hands. But you know, I'm pressed to see how he does behind this Philly line, because LeSean McCoy, who I think is still a better running back than DeMarco Murray, he saw his numbers drop because their line struggled last year, and they're going to struggle even more because they got rid of Jason Peters. I think that he's in for a big surprise, and if you look at my top 100 board that's going to come out tomorrow on fantasy players you should pick, DeMarco Murray is not one of my premier guys that I say you have to go and get right away, because I think behind that Eagles offense, he's not going to have the numbers he had last year. Also, what you have to take into effect is he fumbled 5 times. Well, it doesn't sound like a whole lot. Those are game changing plays. Le'Veon Bell never fumbled the ball. Not just never lost a fumble. He never fumbled the ball in the times that he received it, in the times that he was running with it. He holds on to it. He has ball security. He's a complete weapon. You know, when we were playing, it was the Ravens. Well, first you saw him line up in the Texans. They put him out in the flank, and he just went up and just did a fade route, and they couldn't stop it. And they think he did the same thing to the Ravens like 3 weeks later. He can do so many more things than Murray. And I think, you know, as good as our offensive line is developing, they're not doing for Bell what the Cowboys were doing for Murray. And I think if you give Bell the kind of space that Murray was getting last year, there would be records breaking. So they're calling him Juice right now, Le'Veon Bell. I think that this guy is, I agree with Lance, he's the best running back in football. Fantasy-wise, I say that this is part of my strategy, and this will come out as we do more fantasy articles on BTSC. You don't draft for the first few weeks of the season, right? You draft for the last 5 weeks of the season. Who's gonna be carrying your team throughout? But can they explode in the playoffs? Do they play weak teams or strong teams late in the run? Le'Veon Bell is gonna have some opportunities against the Bengals, the Broncos, a few other teams that weren't that strong against the run in 2014. And that may change, but he's gonna have an opportunity to explode in those last 5 weeks. And if that suspension was towards the end of the season, that would be a problem. But he suspended the first three. Even if he does serve the full suspension of 3 weeks in the beginning of the season, I'm still picking him first if I have the first overall pick, because I know how bad of a man he can be. So that's where I stand. If you're talking real football, Le'Veon Bell. If you're talking fantasy football, Le'Veon Bell. Murray's a bad man, but this year I see him struggling in Philadelphia.
All right, Lance, you still there? What do you think about this debate?
The only thing I would add to, and maybe you guys can look it up, how many carries did Murray have last year? How close was he to the 400 carry mark?
He was close. I want to say he was 392, but I'll fact check here for you. Go ahead.
I'm
pulling it up.
The 400 carry mark is typically the Mendoza line for running backs.
392.
Once you get close to that 400 carry mark, your production drops off precipitously the following year. And typically, guys never recover fully from having close to 400 carries in a season. So, is that, and given the fact that he's changing teams, learning a whole new scheme, trying to get comfortable with the whole new offensive line and how they block, and how and them getting comfortable with him and how he hits the hole and how he wants it blocked, he's going to struggle in Philadelphia. Le'Veon Bell is not going to have the same production as last year because of the suspension if he sticks to 3 games. But overall, he's a more complete player, better in pass pro, better receiving, better in terms of being elusive, like CeCe was talking about. If you're an elite back, you can't put the ball on the ground. Ball security is excellent. So he's better in fantasy, and he's better overall as a player. He is what the new running back position is supposed to look like. When you see running back in the dictionary, it's Le'Veon Bell. Physical, can run between the tackles, can dump it in the red zone, can catch the ball out of the backfield, and can be a red zone threat both running and receiving. It's Le'Veon Bell. He's the most complete and best running back in football.
Yeah, no, I agree, and that's kind of what I was going with when I wrote the article, was I wanted to take a look at statistically what their 2014 season looked like, as well as maybe some projections for 2015. And I think 2015, because a lot of people want to compare these running backs, and it's different. You know, DeMarco Murray, although he did have almost, I think, 400 yards out of the backfield, he's not the receiver that Bell is, as you guys talked about. And the one thing that people often forget is how great Le'Veon Bell is in blitz pickup. I mean, he is a phenomenal blocker. He is always that security blanket. He's the reason why the Steelers don't want him to have to leave the field unless he actually has to. So I think we all agree, Le'Veon Bell is your guy on fantasy as well as every Sunday during the National Football regular season. Now, Lance, I'm going to go to you first here because this is a topic that I know you wanted to talk about. I wrote this article, and it was stemmed from a question-and-answer session through ESPN, AFC North bloggers, and they asked, who is the most feared Pittsburgh Steeler defender on the roster? Now, gone are Brett Kiesel, gone are Troy Polamalu, all these, Lamar Woodley is long gone, all these guys that are no longer on the team, and a lot of people struggled to even pick a name, but when most of them did, they chose James Harrison. Yeah, the guy that's going to be 37 years old during this season. Lance, when you think of this question, who is the most feared Pittsburgh Steelers defender? What name comes to mind? I want to ask you two questions. What name comes to mind, and is there someone that might be on this list by the end of the season that we're not talking about?
The first name that comes to mind, unfortunately for the Stew, it's the name that you mentioned. It's James Harrison. If you go to his Instagram page, you watch the workout. I mean, the guy is throwing what looks like a 75-pound medicine ball in the sand playing volleyball. The guy is doing 10 reps on an incline squat machine of 545 like it's nothing. And you couple that with the fact that he slammed a Cleveland Brown fan on his head like Bruno Sammartino. Also, you go back to the fact that he took those pictures with those 245s in his hand. It's James Harrison. He is a bad man and a freak of nature. The other name that comes to mind is Sharknado. I'm thinking of Shamarco Thomas. There was a hit that Shamarco had in his rookie season and preseason where he laid this wide receiver out in the flat, caused him to fumble. Shamarco's a thumper. Shamarco's a hitter. Quick twitch guy. Very strong. And he lays the wood. So I'm thinking of James Harrison first and Sharknado, baby James, maybe late in the season.
How about the ECC?
So, you can't go against James Harrison. He's James Harrison. He's like, he's the second coming of Greg Lloyd, but he's just as crazy. And you'll love him. You love him just as much. And he has more longevity than Lloyd had in his career. With Harrison, Lance covered up. He has the persona. He has the history. I mean, in 2010, when he kept knocking people out, it was just like, what does this dude do? I mean, the Browns had to hate him because he was like picking them off like he was an assassin. And the Roger Goodell had to, the only way to slow him down was to keep finding him until they finally suspended him. And I was at that game where he hit Colt McCoy. That was a bang bang play. It was a horrible call. And to this day, people still are like, James Harrison's in the game. I mean, look, he came out of retirement. He got off the couch this last year and then destroyed the Ravens in that game. And when he was sacking Flacco all over the place, people were like, this guy still got it. How does he still have it? But at the same time, people realize James Harrison, though he's lifting all these weights, though he's doing it, he doesn't have the young man's body that he used to have it when he was destroying people in the late 2000s. Now he's working with a lot more weight on him, with a lot more wear and tear. I think the person that people aren't talking about, that people do fear, is Lawrence Timmons over the middle. And I thought you did a really good article today, Jeff, on inside linebackers and how we may have the best core of inside linebackers in the NFL. And it's led by this guy drafted the same year as Patrick Willis. I'm working on an article that to come out tomorrow, why Lawrence Timmons has the opportunity to prove that he was a better pick than Patrick Willis if he can be a leader of a great defense and lead this new generation of Steelers, and they win some more Super Bowls. And as great as Pat Willis was when he was on the field, the fact that he had to retire at this point, maybe he does come back, that's out of the picture. But if Lawrence Timmons, he can hit, he's all over the field, he finds you, he never seems like he's out of position. I mean, he puked on the field, stayed in the game, and he's still kicking people's butt. And he's laid some really good shots. And Lance brought up Shamarco. Shamarco does have some good hits, but Shamarco doesn't have that profile yet. He hasn't shown that he can be a consistent hitter player on the field. Lawrence Timmons brings it every play, and you know he's bringing it. And I think that is a fear factor not a lot of people talked about, not a lot of people are giving him a lot of respect for in the media. But I think in locker rooms, when people are looking at game tape, they're like, all right, someone has to get a hat on 94, because if we do not, he will find you. He will kill you, and you will be so sorry. So I'd have to say, okay, James Harrison reputation-wise, Lawrence Timmons performance-wise.
Okay, I'm going to give you guys a name that I'm shocked neither of you had even brought up, and that is, the name is the one Cameron Hayward. Okay, people forget about this guy, maybe because he plays the defensive line. You might forget he had 7.5 sacks last season. He tied the lead with Jason Worlds for most sacks. Now, I understand that James Harrison came off the couch, and James Harrison obviously had 5.5 sacks, and he was dealing with a knee injury as well. And I know that James Harrison has that reputation as a nasty, nasty player. However, I still don't understand how people aren't bringing up Cameron Hayward as an option when it comes to this type of player, because Cameron Hayward, he has that fire with him to him. It's not something like, you know, I don't think it's all an image with him. Like, I don't think that he seems like he's a grinder, but he's a grinder that has that fire in his belly. And you watch him play the game, just saying, by the end of the season, people might be talking about Cam Hayward as a guy to watch out for. I don't know if you see that, CC, or not, but I certainly do. I think that this guy is only going to get better. He's in his fifth year of his rookie contract. He has a lot to play for. If he doesn't get any deal before the 2015 season, I think we could see a breakout year from Cam Hayward this year.
Bob Labriola put him in on the all-modern era Steelers team. And at first I was like, oh, come on, man. We had some good. I was like, you know what? Him and Aaron Smith and Casey Hampton, I can't argue with that. And you're right. You know, Cameron Hayward is a monster. You know, my doppelganger, as Lance would say, I'm Cam Bettis. he does bring the pain. He does cause problems on the line of scrimmage. And I've seen so well how he can shed through a block. He can change the line of scrimmage and make plays. And I love that about D-line, because I played lineman in high school, and that gets me so psyched when you can fire off the ball and bully people. And he does that very well. The only reason I was saying Lawrence Timmons is because the way he flies around the field and the way that people have to account for him every time, I just think that it's that people are going to look at that and say, okay, we got to find him. But you're absolutely right. People are looking at Cam Hayward. And I think that he may be the second best 3-4 defensive end in the league, and that's only behind J.J. Watt, who is undisputedly the best defensive player in the league right now. But if you're looking at top defensive ends, Cameron Hayward should be up there. I thought he deserved a mention on the top 100. So I don't blame you for bringing him up in as the most player right now, because he definitely brings it every play.
Yeah, Lance, what do you think about Cam Hayward?
I was going to say Cam. Cam is definitely the other name that you would have to put in terms of a feared player on this defense. And CC, it just so happened I was at that Browns game as well, but I was on the opposite side of the field. I was on the Steelers side of the field, and you could see that hit to Colt McCoy. But in that game, I got to see the hit on Ben Roethlisberger, which I think everybody in the stadium and that guy thought that Ben had a torn ACL, because that was a wicked hit he took.
That was scary. I remember that.
But, yeah, I would say Cam Hayward. Cam Hayward's the other guy. One thing about Cam is his motor is incredible, and he has very strong hands. He dislodges offensive linemen very easily. And I've seen Cam in person, and he's not the most muscular or ripped guy. It's almost like he has baby Huey strength, which is apropos if you ever ran into Ironhead, his deceased dad. Ironhead had that type of strength where if Ironhead touched you, you felt it in your bones. It could be just a tap, and you were like, this is the strongest man I've ever met in my life. So you can see where he gets that type of strength, especially in his hands, because he just moves offensive linemen. You know, I would challenge people to look at his play on tape. Look past the fact that he's a hustler, but just look at how he moves guys and look at his technique.
Yeah, it's pretty sound. And he worked hard, too. And if I think people will forget, if you go back to his rookie year, he was drafted in the first round. I believe it was the 31st draft pick. It was coming off the Super Bowl 45 loss to the Green Bay Packers. He was the Steelers' first-round pick. And a lot of people had some really high hopes for this kid as a rookie, and it takes time. Stephon Tuitt seems to be the abnormal one that's actually been able to perform as a rookie later on the season. But I think that Cam Hayward, I like Shamarco Thomas, too. I think he is a hitter. He could be sealed, like you said, Lance. But let's move on a little bit. Lance, there's something else we talked about that you wanted to bring up, and it was another article that I wrote about the Pittsburgh Steelers offense. And it's going to be very versatile. It's going to be very dynamic. It's going to be very lethal. It's going to be almost, as I like to call it, a pick-your-poison offense. You want to stop Le'Veon Bell? Go for it. we're going to beat you in the pass game with Antonio Brown, with Marcus Wheaton, Martavis Bryant, Heath Miller. I could go on and on. You want to try to stop Antonio Brown, we'll go to Martavis Bryant. You get the gist of where I'm going. Here's the question that was on the table. How do you stop the Pittsburgh Steelers offense? So you're the defensive coordinator. You have to draw up a game plan. Hey, the way I posed it in the article was good luck, plain and simple. But if you're a defensive coordinator, you got to think of something. Lance, what is your game plan going into the game against the Pittsburgh Steelers offense to at least try to slow them down?
26 Hail Marys, 16 Lord's Prayers, and 8 Hail Marys. but in all seriousness, I think you have to slow down the running game. I think the focus has to be to remove Le'Veon Bell and to stop Le'Veon Bell, because we've seen when Le'Veon struggles, that offense struggles. If Le'Veon doesn't play, they lose. Le'Veon is the guy that you have to take away, because if the running game is clicking, you have no shot. And if Le'Veon is tearing you up in the flat on those Ben Roethlisberger dump-offs that turn into 45-yard games like they did against Atlanta, then they're killing you as well. And given the amount of offense from the yards of scrimmage that he accounts for, and I think it was close to like 45% of the offense, something like some insane number. I might be off on that number. I think you have to focus on him. You have to take Le'Veon away, because if the running game is rolling, you have no shot. If you have to account for the running game and drop a safety in the box, it's over. It is absolutely over. They're going to put 50 on you. So you have to stop Le'Veon Bell first, and you have to go to confession the night before or see a chaplain, get some holy water, some rosaries, some Hail Marys, and some Lord's Prayers.
I love it, CC. You're the defensive coordinator. What are you trying to do?
Well, to be honest, I'm going to try and emulate what the Ravens did in the playoffs. Though there was no Le'Veon Bell there, I'm trying to bring heat from the edges. I want to contain the run, make sure, because even in the second game, when we exploded for all them points, Le'Veon Bell was shut down. He was not destroying them on the ground. Ben Roethlisberger just picked them apart, I think, over time when he had enough opportunities. And the key for me is I'm getting heat. I think the biggest weaknesses on this offense are going to be if you target Marcus Gilbert and if you can get a person who's big enough and fast enough to get around Kelvin Beachum. Now, Kelvin Beachum looks to be a guy that, you know, he's very technically sound and he can definitely do his job. But if you're strong enough, I mean, he's not a big body. And, you know, as technically sound as you want to be, I don't think he's the technically sound kind of guy that can cancel out someone just tossing you if they get the right kind of momentum going. So if I'm thinking about stopping, I'm bringing heat from the corners. I'm making sure that I have premier pass rushers, and I'm just sending heat at Roethlisberger. You're going to have to make a quick decision to beat me, and I'm pressing the receivers, because if I give Antonio Brown space, we could try to keep him in front of us all day, but we've seen how that works. He would break loose. And, you know, you got to challenge the receivers, force them into one-on-one winning battles at the line of scrimmage, and hope that your pass rush can beat the Steelers' offensive line, because that, honestly, is the biggest – if you're going to say that something's a weakness, if you're going to say that something is a point to point at where the Steelers – where can we can beat the Steelers' offense, the offensive line is it right now. Because at receivers, you have the best receiver in the league. Running back, sorry, Le'Veon Bell. Quarterback, Ben Roethlisberger. Okay, so where are we going to go? And even with the offensive line, you got to be careful with the interior, because Marquise Pouncey is one of the best centers in the game. He made the top 100. David DeCastro, an up-and-comer that doesn't get talked about enough in the league, I think he's a bad man. Maybe Ramon Foster. You know, you can attack him and Kelvin Beachum. And I don't think Marcus Gilbert's all that just yet, but I do think he's very good. But I would attack those, get heat on Ben Roethlisberger, force quick decisions, and work to make mistakes happen. That's how I would, if I'm playing against the Steelers, that's how I'm trying to stop them. Make sure that they don't run the ball, and when they are, make sure that they're having to throw a quick pass.
Yeah, I think you guys are on the right track here. And I think your answers are pretty much standard, and especially yours, Lance, when you talk about eliminating Le'Veon Bell. Well, I'm looking at the game log for Le'Veon Bell of 2014. And what they should build on is there were games where he was not a huge part of the game that they won. And they won some of them actually handedly by more than a double-digit deficit. I look at Week 17, where he rushed for only 20 yards against the Bengals, and he caught for 80. Now, he did get hurt in that game, and they still ended up winning. So, I mean, he did have 80 yards. But go back Week 16 against the Kansas City Chiefs. He rushed for 63, only caught for 9 yards, and they ended up winning that game. Now, that was only an 8-point win. I think what they need to build on this year, and I could go back and look at more examples, but no one wants to hear that. I think what they need to build on this year is the fact that Le'Veon Bell is a large part of the offense, but he is not the entire offense. And that's not from a personnel, him as an individual standpoint. It's that they need to just be 100% purely balanced. It cannot have game plans. And I felt like they still did this even last year. I look at the Baltimore game where they retired Mean Joe Green's number on Sunday Night Football against Baltimore. I forget the week. It was maybe Week 9. They won 43-23. He had 20 yards rushing, 38 yards receiving. What did they do? Well, they just threw the ball around the yard. It almost looked like that was the game plan going in. I feel like they should always try to remain balanced. I should think they should always try to run the ball, aim for the 50-50 split every week, because that's what makes it difficult for defenses, is what we're talking about, to try to stop you. If they go into it and say, okay, Pittsburgh is going to try to attack our cornerbacks, if Pittsburgh comes out and says, no, we're just going to run when we need to run, we're going to throw, and it doesn't matter what you do, we're going to beat you however we want to be. We're going to dictate what you do. That's what good offenses do. That's what Super Bowl offenses do, and that's what the Steelers need to do, because defensively, they're always a stopping Pittsburgh. We saw it last year. That's what CC said. The Baltimore Ravens playoff game, it was basically the Ravens were dictating what the Steelers were doing, and it was working to perfection. They were in and around Roethlisberger all game. The Steelers had no rushing attack whatsoever, and I don't know, looking back at that game, if they would have won if Le'Veon Bell was in the lineup anyway. It just seemed like it just was not their night. I don't know what you guys think about that. You might agree, you might disagree. I'll give you a chance to answer that.
Lance, you want to start?
I think they win that game if Le'Veon plays. You know, when we talk about balanced offense, I still think you have to have an identity on offense. You have to have something that you hang your hat on and something that you want to do game in, game out, something critical to how you want to play offense. So, but with their weapons, they are versatile, where if they can't dictate to you based on what their strength is, they can go to some ancillary pieces of the offense and be able to still get you. But I still think you have to have some core principles and a core philosophy as to what your offense is. I think you can get into problems when you're a jack-of-all-trades offense, but just a master of none offense. It's similar to a basketball guy with a post move. You know, I have 150 different moves, but when I need a bucket or I need to go to the line, I got a move that I know is going to work at all times against anybody. And I think there has to be a core philosophy that they want to have to do and dictate every game. And I think sometimes you got to be patient with it, whether it's the short passes, the bubble screens, attacking in the flats, then mixing it up and opening up the running game, whatever it is, whatever they see it as. Let that be your base and your foundation, and then operate your offense based on that.
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So the thing is, you know, when you look at games, you can't always say that, you know, when you're looking at Le'Veon Bell, he is a player that can change a lot of things about a football game, just like Antonio Brown can, just like Ben Roethlisberger can. And having him in the game would have changed so much in their strategy, because if you remember some of the key points in the game, one of the biggest turnarounds in the game was when They threw the ball. When Ben tried to pitch the ball to Ben Tate, like he does to Le'Veon all the time, and Ben and Tate just bobbled it, and then Suggs made a quick reaction, great catch between his knees for an interception. And that, it didn't end the game, but it ended the game. And it was like, well, that was like the sign that basically we were running out of hurrahs to come back with. If that's Le'Veon Bell, first of all, you don't see Le'Veon Bell drop passes. Second of all, when he catches the pass, he's shaking you out your shoes and getting 30 yards. Ben Tate was in there for less than a week, and Ben Tate is nothing compared to Le'Veon Bell when he's been on a team for an entire season. You put Le'Veon Bell in there, I think the Steelers spank the Ravens. And I don't think the Ravens, they did a good job of corralling Ben with what he had, but people forget we only lost by 13 points in the playoffs. And in those 13 points, one of them came off of when Dre Archer scored a touchdown on a drive, and it was called back on a really bad call. And then Ben Roethlisberger came back in the game, who, after being injured, and threw in a late-game interception that clinched it, the loss. So I think you put Le'Veon Bell in this game, it's a whole different level. I think that not only the Steelers beat the Ravens, they'll go on and beat the Patriots in the playoffs last season, and we would have seen a different playoff outset. So thank you, Nelson, for helping the Patriots win another Super Bowl. but in all seriousness, I think definitely you put Bell in. I can't say that I won't be a jerk and say the Steelers definitely win, but I think that they stand that much better chance. And if I had to put money on it, I would put the money on the Steelers winning, and winning by like 15 to 20 points.
Okay, well, we've kind of transitioned from how to beat the Steelers offense into that playoff game. And this brings up, this is off the cuff, but hey, that's somehow live radio works sometimes. I wanted to bring up an article that was written, and I'll say I write this article as well. I talked about how I felt that the loss in the playoffs last year, the 2014 AFC wildcard game loss to the Ravens, can actually benefit the Steelers in 2015. And I got a lot of backlash and people saying nothing good comes from the loss, this, that, and the other. But the people that said that must not have read the words on the screen, because if you read the article, what I meant by that article is that it gave some of these young players, like Cam Hayward, like these rookies and Shazier and Tuitt and McCullers, and even some guys like McClendon who've been around but haven't been on a lot of teams that have been the postseason, they gave them experience. It gave the Steelers a glimpse of what we have to do in 2015 if we lose Le'Veon Bell again. And I think that if you look at those as intangibles, I know Lance loves that word, if you look at those as intangibles, the things that we can't necessarily gauge but are really important, I think that is still a true statement. If they can learn from that and they can actually better them in 2015, I want to get your guys' feel. Lance, I'll ask you first. Are you on the side of people that say nothing good comes from a loss, a loss is a loss, your season's over, you're ridiculous for writing this article, or are you on the side that says the Steelers can benefit from this? And that obviously they'll be agreeing with me, but that's never stopped you in the past. So what do you think?
I think it's key for young players to get a taste of playoff football, to see the increase of intensity, how the speed gets ramped up even more, just to feel that, to feel the week of preparation going into that game, the level of expectation, the excitement of the fans, the obligation that you have with the media, how everything is ramped up, just to feel that and not be in awe or fear of that moment when you get into it, can only aid a young football team. So I'm in agreement that even losing in the playoffs can and will be some benefit for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
What do you see, Steve?
So I'm in total agreement with you, Jeff, because and you're right. People often just look at the title, say that's ridiculous, and they go in rage mode. That happens. But you are so right, and it's not just getting the playoff experience; it's feeling the distaste of losing and saying, I don't want to ever feel that again. You look at some of the greatest, some of the heroes, some of my personal heroes in sports. Jordan went through, it had to do with the Pistons. As great as Michael Jordan is, he never went to a game 7 in the finals history. He had to go through the Bad Boys and the Detroit Pistons, and it took him losing for several years before he finally was able to
work with the team and then be unstoppable in the playoffs. When in those in that span of eight seasons, where you know they were just unstoppable when Jordan was with them for a full year. Same thing goes for the Steelers back in the early 2000s. If you remember, in the 2001 AFC Championship game, they said that the Steelers had already packed their bags to go to the Super Bowl when they played the Patriots that week. That was their mindset was not there. They didn't know what it was like. You know, Joey Porter, Plaxico Burress, even Hines Ward, Cordell Stewart, they didn't know. Well, Cordell Stewart was different. He was there for a while. But Alan Faneca, all these guys that had made up this new nucleus of really good players, potentially great players at the time, they didn't know what it was like to lose to someone and feel that distaste. And I think that loss and the Titans loss, and even in 2004, that spurred Joey Porter to want to be a better player. That spurred Hines Ward to want to be a better player and say, I can't go through this anymore. And, like, when you saw Hines Ward crying over Jerome Bettis maybe never winning the Super Bowl in his career, that kind of stuff, it sticks with you. It makes you want to be better. And I think that that was something that Casey Hampton went through, and you saw Casey Hampton telling someone like Lamar Woodley, who came – in the middle, he came in 2007. They lost the wild card game, but he came when the team was already established. The nucleus was there, and Lamar Woodley, he was always, you know, he was super happy. He thought things were good, and he didn't have to work to be great. He just had to do his job, and he was very good at his job. But Casey Hampton told him on the sidelines in one game, "You don't want to be great. You just want to be good. You got to be better than good. You got to be great." And that's when you saw Lamar Woodley in seasons afterwards saying that the Ravens will never win a Super Bowl because they got to go through us. And it's like, nah, bro, you can't speak indefinites like that. You have to speak in the mind of we're going to bring it to them every time, and they know that if they're going through us, it's going to be a hard fight. And you know, I think something that Pittsburgh is seeing right now with the Pirates, and you were just talking about that earlier, the past two seasons, these Pirates, they're young, they haven't seen anything like this. McCutcheon, Walker, Alvarez, all these guys, Cole. The two seasons ago when they lost to the Cardinals in the NLDS, you know, it was rough, but they didn't have the players. They didn't have the roster to do it. Last year when they got aced out by Bumgarner, it was rough, but they're learning. And now you see the grit, the fire in the Pirates, as you saw over the weekend when they took it to the Cardinals. They said, we're better than y'all, and we're going to be the best team in baseball this year. That's the grit of champions, and that is built through losing. You don't just walk on the field, just you're a winner in that. And that's it. You had to go through some hardship to be a winner. And that's what this – I think you are exactly right. This playoff loss could be so huge for someone like Shazier. If he can come out and dominate and use that as, I don't ever want to lose to these guys again. I hate these guys. I don't like these guys. Let that be the motivation. And if it is, you will be 100% right. And I want you to write an article this time next year when we got Seven Lombardi, and you say that playoff game was a big part of them moving forward.
I hope I get that opportunity. Now, it's hard to believe that, you know, it's tough. It's tough for fans. It's tough for – I'm sure it's even tough for the players. It's really tough for someone that writes for a website, that runs a website in the month of July where you have no news. And, hey, you know what? Thank goodness there's no news on the Steelers. When you've got reports of Jason Pierre-Paul blowing his fingers off, another cornerback down in Tampa Bay, his name escapes me, firework accident on the 4th of July, you've got guys that are getting into issues off the field. The fact that the Steelers have had a quiet offseason to this point should be, hey, two thumbs up.
It's a blessing.
Because that's what we want to hear. It might be a boring offseason, but you know what? It's hard to believe that we are inside 2 weeks now of this thing kicking off. And the next time you talk to us on the Standard is the Standard, it'll be as a primer for training camp. We will be on the week leading up to training camp. We'll be talking about some features at BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. We're going to be running our Steelers Training Camp Confidential, which will run the day of the Steelers reporting to camp. It'll have everything that you need in terms of getting prepared for training camp, from the schedule to the training camp battles to all that stuff. And we're going to give you a lot of that stuff right here on this show. And as always, make sure you listen to other shows too. Chris, your show, What's Hot, it airs on Wednesdays. Danny Bostic,
yeah.
If you haven't been seeing what she's doing on Behind the Steel Curtain, she did an awesome interview with Isaac Redman, asked, where have you been? What have you been doing? She's been getting inside with players that no one else is doing. no other site other than Steelers.com is doing. It makes Behind the Steel Curtain just a little bit better than our competition. But as always, Lance, you missed the first part of the show, man. Is there anything you want to talk about before we send it off tonight?
I think we hit it all. I think we hit it all. Fantastic show. Thanks, guys, for letting me hop in. It's been a hectic day out on the West Coast, but I was glad to be able to hop in and join and add my two cents to it.
No problem. CC, any last words before we sign off?
I just want to say to all the Steelers fans out there right now, be prepared. Be prepared for a gritty season, for a lot of things to happen that you're not going to like. I think this is going to be a season where the Steelers get tested. There's going to be some key injuries there's going to be problems. There's going to be obstacles throughout the season. We already know we have the toughest schedule, but watch for the grit of this team to come alive. Watch for Ben Roethlisberger to be the leader that we know he is. Watch for Antonio Brown to take over and for this receiving core to become one of the best in the league. Watch for Le'Veon Bell to be unstoppable and for Marquise Pouncey and David DeCastro to be a 1-2 punch that no one's – I'm telling you, there is so much potential. And I just went over the offensive side of the ball. This defensive side, there are plenty of upsides and things to watch for. Don't think it's going to be a 16-0 run. Don't expect us to go 14-2 and not to have any problems. I am saying 12-4, but I'm saying that there's going to be some serious fights that you're going to see these guys in and some dog fights. But you're going to see them just like we were talking about with the playoffs. They're going to come out of it. They're going to be better for it. And come the playoffs, I think that the Steelers are going to be the one team that no one wants to see.
I hope you're right, CC. I really do. We thank you for listening. Make sure you check BehindTheSteelCurtain.com early and often for all your Pittsburgh Steelers needs. And as always, remember, in 2 weeks, you'll see us back here. The Standard is the Standard. Check us out on iTunes. Search The Standard is the Standard for all Behind the Steel Curtain podcasts. We'll see you next time. I'm Jeff for Chris and Lance. Bye.